Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Janmaishvarya Shruta Srivir Edhamana Madhapuman. Naivahatya bidai tumbai twamakinchanagocharam. My lord, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. Purport. Being materially advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic family and possessing great wealth, an education, and attractive personal beauty. All materialistic men are mad after possessing all these material opulences, and this is known as the advancement of material civilization. But the result is that by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly, O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he's unable to commit. Such is the power of the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely 1, high parentage, 2, good wealth, 3, high education, and 4, attractive beauty, are, so to speak, disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. The material covering of the pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever is an external feature of the unhealthy body. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become materially impoverished. There is no discouragement. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Grossly illusioned persons are quite unfit for entrance into the kingdom of God. Om Jnanati Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ramo, Hare Ramo, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we are studying Queen Kunti's prayers, which are an entreaty to Krishna when he's about to leave Hastinapur after the battlefield of Kurukshetra for Dwarka. And we've seen in this chapter how actually Krishna is going to leave several times over the next few chapters. And each time that he's about to leave, the thought of separation for him invokes great feelings of attachment and love by his devotees. One of the characteristics of prema bhakti is Sri Krishna Karshana. There are six qualities of pure devotional service. And two of the qualities are manifest in prema bhakti. Sandrandana Visheshatma, the indescribable pleasure that one gets from Krishna consciousness executed in prema bhakti. And one is Sri Krishna Karshani, that love for Krishna, intensified love for Krishna at the level of prema, that love can actually bind and control Krishna. And we've actually seen that love demonstrated here by his devotees. And in these chapters that we are discussing, we're actually being introduced to the essential theme of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Krishna's relationship with his devotees, the deep love that Krishna has for his devotees, and the deep love that the devotees have for Krishna. So these are Kunti's expressions of love. This is the mind of a pure devotee. The mind of a pure devotee is intense thoughts of pleasing Krishna, intense desire to please Krishna, intense activities to please Krishna. There's nothing else in a pure devotee's mind but the desire to please Krishna. That love is so intense. So this is Kunti's, so these are Kunti's prayers, expressing her devotion to Krishna because he's leaving. And we saw he was about to leave before. And when he was going to leave before, when he was going to leave before, then, just as he was about to leave, Uttara, we remember this, Uttara came running towards him. Because Ashvatthama, who had been punished by Arjuna for killing the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, was again taking revenge, and he threw the Brahmastra weapon he threw the Brahmastra weapon to annihilate the last remaining male issue of the Pandava Okuru dynasty, which was Maharaj Prickett. And then we saw how Krishna again protected his devotees. He actually, it's described in the commentaries that he not only protected Marge Prickett in the womb, but actually the Brahmastra had actually had burnt his body. And actually only the soul was still manifest. So Krishna went in and he manifests the body again. And then we know that Marge Prickett is called Parikshit because when he saw Krishna's form, for the rest of his life he was actually hankering for that form. So Krishna had protected again. And then again he was going to leave. And then when he was leaving, about to leave again, then it was described that it's actually his aunt. Kunti is the sister of Krishna's father, who is Vasudev. So we saw when she sees Krishna's leaving, then she begins her prayers. And right now we're in the middle of her prayers. And her first prayer, she begins to, she had to offer prayers because she paid obeisances to Krishna. And she is in familiar relationships superior to Krishna. So to pay obeisances, especially publicly, is very, very awkward. So actually to explain why she was paying obeisances and she began to glorify Krishna, how he was above the modes of material nature because he was the original, because he was the controller of the material nature, Prakriti Purusha Param. He's the controller of Prakriti. And then she explained that she said you were inside and out because she saw that Krishna manifested in the womb of Uttara and then was standing outside. He said, you're everywhere. You manifest inside and out, yet you're invisible to all. You're everywhere, but yet you're invisible. And then she explains why. Because you're covered by the curtain of Maya. You're covered due to people's attitude. Therefore, they can't perceive you. And then she said that you're known. She said, you come to enlighten those in the mode of goodness. You come to enlighten those in the mode of goodness, the Paramahamsas and the Amala Atmaramas, the pure souls, those who could discriminate. She said, so how can us women who are less intelligent know you? But actually, as Prabhupada presented in the purport very nicely, that's not the way we actually understand Krishna. We can't understand him by knowledge. But we understand Krishna when he reveals us due to our love for him. And therefore, because Kunti was so sincere, sincere means that you, when you're sincere in a relationship, it means that you actually want to, when you're sincere in a relationship, it means that you actually want to please the other person. And when you have that sincerity in a relationship, that you actually, whatever the relationship is, if it's a friend, and you're sincere, you actually want to serve him. It's not you want anything from him. Bhakti means sincerity. So when you're actually sincere and you want to serve that friend, then the friend opens up and reveals himself. In any relationship, let's say you're a superior of someone and you're not just exploiting, but you actually want to serve them. If it's your mother or father, and they're actually, it's not that they're treating you nicely because they want you to, you know, glorify the family by becoming a doctor, a lawyer, or, you know, but they're actually sincere and they want to please you, then you reveal yourself to them. So similarly, when you enter into relationship with Krishna sincerely, then he reveals himself. So that's actually the process. And therefore, Kunti prayed Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopa Kumara Govindaya Namo. She offered obeisances to Krishna in relationship to his devotees, because that's actually how he's known. He's known as the son of Vasudeva. It means that Vasudeva knows Krishna because he serves him lovingly. The pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda and the other coward men of Vrindavan, the enlivener of the cows and senses. So this is how Krishna is approached. Krishna is not approached by any material assets. There's no material assets that one could have to get to know and understand Krishna. You can only understand Krishna by bhakti. And bhakti means, bhakti is sincerity. Bhakti is the desire to please Krishna and nothing else, without any motive. So this is actually what's being presented here. The method of actually understanding Krishna. Many verses here, and then she explains how Krishna protected her. She mentioned also, Krishna also protected Devaki and Vasudeva. The Prabhupada in the purport makes a very interesting point that Devaki's seven sons were killed, and Krishna was protected. But all Kunti's sons were protected. And the point that is being made, Kunti's just remembering how all the difficulties she went through and how Krishna had protected her. And Prabhupada said two things. He said, one, Devaki went through one difficulty. Kunti went through many, many difficulties. And also, Kunti was a widow. And Devaki had her husband. So because Kunti was more dependent, because she was more helpless, therefore, she got more attention from Krishna. She got more protection from Krishna. Because Krishna protected all her sons. Because she was more dependent and more helpless. And this is actually the position of a devotee, that when he's actually dependent on Krishna, we are dependent on Krishna, but when he's not in the illusion that he's not dependent on Krishna, then Krishna gives him attention and care. Prabhupada gave the example of just like a child. Because the child is so dependent on the mother, then the mother naturally gives more attention to the child. And when the child grows up and he's older and, you know, he doesn't need the parents anymore, he's capable, then the mother does not give as much care and attention. And there's not as much love. Maternal love, the essence of maternal love is called anugraha. Anugraha means mercy or kindness. Kindness must be given to someone who is incapable or in need. And therefore, the motherly love is more intense to a child who's incapable in need. And therefore, the tendency of a mother is, even if the child gets older, to still see that incapability. So, because of Kunti's difficulties and Kunti's calamities in life, because Kunti didn't have a husband, because she was exiled to the her sons were exiled to the forest, because she was threatened her whole life, she always, you know, she had nothing to depend on but Krishna, and therefore experienced Krishna's protection and Krishna's maintenance. This is the purpose of sannyas. The real purpose of sannyas is to put yourself in a situation without any material protective agents. You know, you go to the forest, And when you go to the forest, you don't know where you're going to eat. You don't know how you're going to be protected. There's wild tigers. There's snakes. And when you go to the forest, what happens is you're dependent on Krishna completely. Same, and therefore you see Krishna's protection. You see Krishna's maintenance. When we surrender to Krishna, in other words, when we're completely dependent on Him, then He protects us, He maintains us, and we actually see that. That's the purpose of sannyas, because when one's in the household, he's not as dependent on Krishna, and therefore can't experience His protection and maintenance. And that's what invokes the devotee's love for Krishna. When he actually sees Krishna's care for him and His protection for him, which generally comes in very, very difficult circumstances, then you can actually see that you have a personal relationship with Krishna. When you see Krishna's hand in your life. But when one has so much pride and so much material so-called protective agents or something, one doesn't see that. So this was Kunti's mood. And then when she saw that Krishna was leaving, then the previous verse, which leads to this one, was Vipada Shantu Tashashvat Tatta Tatra Jagat Guru Babato Darshanam Yat Syat Apuna Baba Darshanam. She wanted the calamities to happen again and again. She welcomed them. Because when she had the calamities, when she was in need, then Krishna was there. When Krishna was there. It's just like the mother. When you have need, she's there. And it's not a question of just having need. It's a question of feeling need. From actually realizing that you have need. That's why Prabhupada said we should chant the holy name of Krishna like a child who is crying for his mother. Because there's so much sincerity in that. Because the child actually is dependent. And therefore the child, when the child cries, it's with so much affection for the mother. The mood, just like the mood of the mother's. This is from Rasa Shastra. The mother's mood of love is called anugraha, or mercy. That's her experience of love. It's kindness. Without me, you will die. But the mood of love of the servant, this is in Rasa Shastra, is called prabhutagyan. You are my master. You are my protector. That's the mood of love. If your relationship with any superior, with your parents when you were younger, your love for them is my mother is maintaining me, she's protecting me, she cares for me so much. She'll die for me. She's my protector, my maintainer. Even for the spiritual master, I'm dependent on his mercy. I'm dependent on I'm dependent on his mercy. I'm dependent on his care. Without his association, I'm nothing. So this is our love for Krishna in the mood of servitude. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Dana Pran, Krishna is the mother, Krishna is the father, Krishna is the source of our life. So this is the mood. So Kunti Dave, when she had calamities, she was so much experiencing the love and maintenance and protection of Krishna, and therefore the remembrance of Krishna. It was so favorable for her spiritual life. And because she was actually a parishad, a personal associate of Krishna, in her difficulties, Krishna was right there.
Krishna was right there. So therefore, Krishna is going. Let the calamities happen. Let the difficulties happen. Because when that's there, then I am remembering you. And I'm loving you. My love is so enriched by your care, your protection. Now, you've settled all the problems. Everything's okay. I fear for myself now. Have you ever noticed that Krishna never allows us to quite be comfortable? Despite everything we do? You ever notice that? You'll see later on what happens. Yudhisthira, who's depressed after the battlefield of Kurukshetra for 33 years, he's in a state of depression. Then finally what happens is his Maharaj Prakrit is older and he can take over the kingdom. And what does Krishna do when he's in his peaceful mood? Vidura comes back after pilgrimage. I think he was on pilgrimage for 30 years. And what does he do? He starts preaching renunciation. And Dhritarashtra, who's his uncle, who he's very, you know, he wants to have his uncle around, even though he was on the other side and mistreated him. It's Indian joint family. So he had the uncle around. So he preached, and then his uncle just got so enlightened, he just like left the home. And then his aunt left the home, and then the Pandavas left. Krishna just pinches you. Just when you're sitting comfortable, he pinches you. What are you having? Just when you get your diet together, right? Just when you get your health together, he pinches you. Because he wants us to remember him. He wants us to experience him. He wants us to be dependent on him. So therefore, because she said this, I wish these calamities. Why did she say this? She said this because, and Kunti's saying, this is why. My lord, your lordship can be easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So this is why Kunti saying, let the calamities happen again. Because when you get comfortable, what to speak of get comfortable, but when you have material opulences, you tend to depend on them for your protection. You tend to depend on them for your protection and not Krishna, and therefore don't experience his love for you. Or you don't experience your love for him. The servant's love for Krishna is that mood that you are my protector, you are my maintainer. That's the servant's mood of love. So it's very hard to experience when you have other maintainers or protectors. What to speak? My aristocracy, I don't need Krishna. I'm well protected and respected in society by my high birth. I'm very learned. I'm an educated person. I got so many PhDs and so much knowledge. And I can control the world by that and make myself comfortable by my knowledge. And I don't need that. Or by my beauty. I'm a very handsome man. I'm a very beautiful woman. And everyone respects me and bows down to me and is after me. I don't need it. Or Aishwarya, I'm so wealthy. I have so much money. I can buy off anybody. These things, they intoxicate one. And therefore, one who is on this path of trying to accrue these things, then he cannot have bhakti. Because he will not be sincere in his love for Krishna. You are my maintainer. You are my protector. O Krishna, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. He won't be like that child. There's one example of this that a personal example that one sannyasi told me. He was in the Philippines or something, and he was swimming in the ocean. Maybe it was Australia or something. It was one sannyasi who since left due to a enjoying spirit. But he told the story. He was in the, you know, he was in the river, the ocean, and he was swimming, and then there was this beautiful young woman, and then she started to say, "Help, save me. Help, save me." So he became in a dilemma, because here was this very attractive woman about 50 yards from him, and he was a sannyasi, and she was drowning. You know, what should he do? Because, you know, it wasn't like the... But then when he listened to her voice, he could see that she wasn't actually drowning, but rather she was trying to seduce him. In other words, it wasn't sincere, her helplessness. Because it wasn't sincere helplessness, then he did not respond. So similarly, when we call to Krishna and our helplessness is not sincere, because we are in a position where we think we don't need him. And that's why Krishna doesn't allow that. That's why he puts the devotees in difficulties and troubles and calamities. He puts us in a position where we can experience bhakti. Prabhupada says in the purport, "Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly, O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere." A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he's incapable of uttering the name in quality. So these four principles, Prabhupada said, beauty, education, wealth, aristocracy or birth, are disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. And therefore, in the purport, Prabhupada also says another interesting thing is that he said they're like a fever. A fever indicates a disease. The fever indicates the disease. So these things are like they represent the disease. Because I guess I'll talk about this verse, and it also refers to the next verse. They're pretty much the same. Because the material nature, it's manifest in Vedic cosmology. The material nature manifests from the beginning, from the mahatattvas, the collective false ego. The basis of material creation is the collective false ego, the ahankara, the sense that I am separate from Krishna because I am the enjoyer and controller. So the material nature expands to facilitate that false ego. So especially when you have the advancement of material civilization without the principles of culture, then its expansion is on the basis of how people can enjoy and control and forget Krishna. So the creations of the material civilization have that potency to put you in the illusion that I am independent, I'm not dependent, I'm not in need. Everything's happening by my power, ahankara. I am the doer. I am the controller. So therefore, in spiritual advancement, sometimes the reduction of things in a person's life, either by his own volition or by Krishna's will, is a symptom that his ahankara or false ego or the material disease is going down. The pride is going down. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become materially impoverished. This is no discouragement. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. So it's a good sign when the devotee is in a situation where he becomes materially impoverished by Krishna. And we see that. We see generally speaking, it's not the absolute principle, and I'll explain that. But generally, in Krishna's mercy, advanced devotees possess very little. They possess very little. But this term here, I'm going to explain it another way. It says you can be approached by only those who are akinchana gocharam. So kinchana means something, and akinchana means nothing. So Prabhupada also said that this akinchana, it's not just the external circumstances, but as Prabhupada said, they are related. The external is related to the internal, but not absolutely. Because to possess nothing means to be, not just to renounce the object, but to renounce the conception that it's yours. And if one is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, he may be able to possess a lot without being in the illusion that it's his. And Prabhupada gave two examples. He said, one, he once was in Calcutta and he saw a hobo. Now, I don't, like a hobo, you have a stick and a little bag, but some Indian version of a hobo. But Prabhupada said, I could see he was not a kinchana because he was, this was mine. But Prabhupada said, but the Pandavas possessed the whole world, but they had no sense of possessiveness. So this is why Kunti's saying, let the calamities happen. Let those situations when I'm in the forest, when I'm in trouble, when there's difficulties, because then it's so good for my bhakti, it's good for my devotion. Because one, you reciprocate with that by protecting me. And if I accept my situations as your will and surrender to that, I experience your protection. I experience your maintenance. And therefore, I experience my love for you as your servant. You are my maintainer. You are my protector. Okay, we'll go on to the next verse.
Namo kinchana vittaya nivritta guni vrittaye Atma Ramaya Shantaya Kaivalya Pataye Nama.
My obeisances unto you who are the property of the material impoverished. So not only are you easily approached by the material impoverished, but you become their property. They own you. Because those that are the materially impoverished and have that realization that you are the maintainer and protector, I become bound by that love. It's so ironic, isn't it? You're the materially impoverished, but you own Krishna. I actually see this, how Krishna works. He takes away everything to give you himself. I actually saw this with Kalini's husband, Keshava Bharti. In the last 10 or 12 years, I give this example. I mean, what he went through, he made some mistakes, and I mean, he just got smashed, and there was no respite. There was no respite. And because he's a loyal devotee, instead of like becoming disgruntled and leaving, or, he just humbly accepted. It really wasn't fair. And I couldn't see how someone could tolerate anything more. And then I saw the result of it is that he winds up as a service to Prabhupada in Govardhan. So Krishna took away everything. Why? To give him himself. He gave him Govardhan. Just like Raghunath Das Goswami prays, Nirapadi Karunena, Sri Satchinandanena, Twaya Kapati Satopi, Pienarpitopi.
Iti kala kala nartam lagnatas tvadvayami.
I forgot that. No, that's the wrong thing. Anyway, the verse says is that by the unlimited and boundless mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Raghunath Das Goswami is praying, even though I am a rascal and a cheater, he has given you to me. Lord Chaitanya gave a Govardhan Shila to Raghunath Das Goswami. And Raghunath Das Goswami had nothing. He gave up everything. And when he gave up everything, he got Krishna. So, this is a very bad process of self-realization if you want to enjoy the material world. Because Krishna will give you himself. But so that you can take it, he will take away everything. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied and therefore you're the most gentle and are the master of the monists. So here, Prabhupada's going to explain this, that you can only possess the spiritual if you give up the material. This is the point that he wants to make. And he's talking on this point out, Namo Kinchana Vitaya, Akinchana Vitaya, you are property of Akinchana. Who a material. So he explains in the purport, and Prabhupada also makes a point. He said, you can't actually become a renouncer. For one, nothing actually belongs to you. So in that sense, you can't be a renouncer, because actually nothing is yours anyway. You can only realize that nothing belongs to you. That's one point he makes, but he also makes the point that you can't be a renouncer in another sense, because in the other sense, you always possess something. If you possess the material, but even if you give it the material, you'll possess Krishna, you'll possess the spiritual, so you really can't be a renouncer. You're always going to have something because you're a sentient living being. It just depends on what you want. Do you want the material or you want the spiritual? And Krishna can give both. But when he gives you the material, it's only because you'll be in the conception that when he gives the material and spiritual, it's only because you're so fixed in the conception that everything's Krishna. You'll ride in a Rolls Royce if Krishna gives it, but you'll think it's Krishna's. You'll live in a big mansion, but you'll think it's Krishna. You'll have a big family, but you'll think it's Krishna's family. So Prabhupada tells a nice story. There's a nice story about Sanatan Goswami. He had a touchstone. You ever heard this story before? And this stone was left in a pile of refuse. A needy man took it, but later on wondered why the valuable stone was kept in such a neglected place. He therefore asked Sanatan for the most valuable thing, and then he was given the holy name of the Lord. Akinchana means one has nothing to give materially. A factual devotee of Mahatma does not give anything material to anyone because he has already left all material assets. He can, however, deliver the supreme asset, namely the personality of Godhead, because he is the property of a factual devotee. Now this is interesting. The touchstone of Sanatana Goswami, which was thrown in the rubbish, was not the property of the Goswami. Otherwise, he would not have kept it in such a place. So what happens is when the man wanted, the man was actually greedy. There's more to the story. So when he got the touchstone, he said, this was not the most valuable thing. Otherwise, why was it in the refuse? So when he went back to Sanatana Goswami and said, I want the most valuable thing, he said, okay, then take that and throw it out. So he threw it out. He said, okay, here's the holy name of Krishna. Now, Prabhupada, I remember this, makes a very... Yeah, this specific example given for the neophyte devotees just to convince them that material hankerings and spiritual advancement go ill together. You can't have both. You want the touchstone or you want the holy name of the Lord. You got to make your choice.
Unless one is able to see everything as spiritual in relation with the Supreme Lord, one must always distinguish between spirit and man. In other words, you can't have it unless you can make the distinction. Krishna's not going to give it to you unless you have to make the distinction. Or you're a mixed devotee and you so much want to be in Maya that he'll give you the material things to frustrate you with them. But a spiritual man, now the question is, the Prabhupada answered this, if Sanatan Goswami was so advanced, then why did he take the refuge and put it far more entangled? There may be reasons, but Prabhupada said, a spiritual master like Sanatan Goswami, although personally able to see everything as spiritual, set this example for us because we have no spiritual vision. He was the acharya. He was afraid if he used it, you know, then, you know what happened? Yukta Vairagya. Everyone, you know, to execute Krishna. I think that happened in our movement. Some people became, not all, became acharyas, became gurus, and then lived opulently and said it's for preaching. And then what happened? Everyone in their zone lived opulently for preaching. So it's very dangerous for even an advanced person to live too opulently, even if he can use it in Krishna's service, because others may imitate. What to speak, as you were both saying, that there's such a tendency for it to contaminate you anyway. So people like Sanatan Goswami also just wanted to, you know, they wanted to live renounced. So interesting. And let's read from Prabhupada's purport further. Advancement of material vision of material civilization is a great stumbling block for spiritual advancement. Such material advancement entangles the living being in the bondage of a material body, followed by all sorts of material miseries. Such material advancement is called anartha, or things not wanted. Actually, this is so. In the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at a cost of 50 cents. It's really expensive. Can you imagine wasting 50 cents on lipstick? That's a lot of money in those days. And there are so many unwanted things which are all products of material conception of life. By diverting attention to so many unwanted things, human energy is spoiled without achievement of spiritual realization, the prime necessity of life. So this is another point, that they distract us. Our time and our energy has to go into the maintenance of material. We become attached. I was just talking to Baladev, and I was giving the example that in Vrindavan, when I left the Gurukul, I didn't have a place to stay. You know? So then the next year, you know, and then I came to Vrindavan, and Braj Vihari gave me an apartment. And then they put me in the MVT. First, you know, one life member gave me an apartment, and then Borijan had a place there, and I was staying there, and it was like generator was working and, like, you know, running sweet water. And then all of a sudden I was saying, I got to live like this in Vrindavan. I got to live like this in Vrindavan. I have to get an apartment for myself. You know, I need a place in Vrindavan. I was thinking like that. And then when I realized that I was getting in so much anxiety, you know, the attachment was so much anxiety that I just decided that's not the way you live in Vrindavan. What Krishna provides you, then you, that's Vrindavan life. When Krishna provides you something, then you, that's how you live. And whatever he provides, you'd be happy. Because so much mental energy becomes wasted. It says, such material assets are products of the three modes of material nature. So they're transforming, the modes of material nature are transforming to satisfy your material desires. So all these assets, they foil spiritual energy, and thus the less we possess such material products of material nature, the more we have a good chance for spiritual progress. And then now after this, now Kunti is going to
she's going to begin to explain, now that she's explained how you approach Krishna, now she's going to explain Krishna's position again. In the next verse, I think it'll say that too, that in anticipation of the question of why you're praising Krishna so much, these are from notes. You know, everybody says, I thought he was just the son of Devaki. This is the answer. So she begins to explain, Nivritta Guna Vrittaye, he's completely transcendental to the material nature. He's standing there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but he's not there because of the modes of material nature. He's in the world. We're in the world is because we need the transformations of matter to satisfy our ahankara, false ego. I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. We need that. And that's why we're here in the world, because it transforms to satisfy the desires within us that need to be filled in the illusion that we're the controller and the enjoyer. So the modes of material nature are just transformations of matter that transform in particular to satisfy particular desires. New York City, passion. If you're passionate, New York City, it's just constructed. And when you go and you associate with it, your passion gets satisfied. So it's like that. So but Krishna, he's Nivritta Guna Vrittaye. He's not here for that. He's not here to control material nature. That's not his enjoyment. That's for the conditioned souls, not him. He's just here to, and he'll explain why he comes. But he's transcendental. And the devotees, Prabhupada said, this hankering, the material disease is due to hankering after and lording over material nature. This hankering is due to an interaction of the three modes of nature, and neither the Lord nor the devotee have attachment to such false enjoyment. Therefore, the Lord and the devotees are called Nivritta Guna Vritti. They're not attached to this. And then Prabhupada said, because the Lord is the property of the devotees are the property of the Lord reciprocally. And the devotees are certainly transcendental to the modes of nature. This is a conclusion. So because they surrender to Krishna and they become Krishna's, then Krishna becomes theirs. Krishna becomes theirs. And then he's Atmarama. Krishna is self-satisfied within himself. He doesn't need the modes of material nature. And therefore, Shantaya, he's Shanti, he's peaceful, he's gentle. You're not gentle when you want so many things. Because attachment leads to this passion. Attachment is passion, and that leads to anger. So when you're Atmaram, when you're self-satisfied, then you're Shantaya, then you're peaceful. And Kaivalya Pataye Namaha. And therefore, you are the master of the monists. So he's just...
Text 28. Manyetvam kalamishanam anadi nidanam vivum samam charantam sarvatra bhutanam yam mitakali. My Lord, I consider your lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. So Kunti is continuing to present the position of Krishna, how he's actually the Supreme Lord of all living entities. Remember at the beginning of her prayers, or just when Krishna was about to leave, she paid her obeisances, and anticipating the reaction of people of why she's why she's, as Krishna's aunt, is taking that position and praising and glorifying Krishna so much. She's explaining how Krishna's not just the son of her brother Vasudev, but she's explaining his position, Buddha Bhava Samavita, and the wise who know Krishna's position engage in devotional service. So she's explaining why she is worshipping and praising Krishna, because of his position. Prabhupada said, purport, Kunti knew that Krishna was neither her nephew nor an ordinary family member of her paternal house. She knew perfectly well that Krishna is the primeval Lord who lives in everyone's heart as the super soul Paramatma. So in the previous verse, Krishna, Kunti had described Krishna as Kaivalya Pateye Namaha, who is the master of the monist. That's Krishna's relationship with Brahman. Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. Krishna says, I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. So last verse explained Krishna's relationship with the impersonal Brahman. And this is Krishna's relationship with Paramatma. That it's another name, that Krishna is the Paramatma. And because he's the Paramatma, another name of the Paramatma feature of the Lord is Kala, or eternal time. So Krishna is represented in this world as eternal time. Because as Prabhupada mentions here, eternal time is the witness of our actions, good and bad, and thus resultant reactions are destined by him. Now that's the position of the Paramatma. And Prabhupada explains that we may forget the misdeed for which we may suffer at this present moment, but we must remember that Paramatma is our constant companion, and therefore he knows everything, past, present, and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, he is the supreme controller also. So Kala represents the Paramatma, because the Paramatma is destines all actions and reactions. In other words, for our deeds to purify ourselves of the consciousness that caused us to act sinfully, then we get reactions. We get reactions to that. So the Paramatma destines all actions and reactions. And the way the Paramatma gives us our reactions to our past deeds is through the transformation of the material energy, both subtle and gross, over time. In other words, as time moves in this material world, then the material energy also transforms in various ways, causing happiness and distress. So therefore, time is actually the representative of the Paramatma. Without his sanction, it's Paramatma, not a blade of grass can move. So everything is moving by the sanction of Paramatma through his representative as time, for the purpose of purifying the conditioned souls. Prabhupada said, the devotees of the Lord do not misuse their freedom, and therefore they are good sons of the Lord. Others who misuse freedom are put into miseries destined by the eternal Kala. The Kala offers the conditioned souls both happiness and distress. It is all predestined by eternal time. So our destiny is determined by our previous activities, which are sanctioned by the Paramatma, and therefore, and the destiny is carried out by time, or Krishna's representative in this world. Now, because our happiness and distress is caused by Krishna in the form of Paramatma, who is represented in this world, or another feature of him, or another name is Kala or time, then it may seem that Krishna is partial, that Krishna is giving happiness to one and distress to another, because it's under his control. Not even a blade of grass moves without his sanction. But here it's said that despite the fact that he's eternal time and the supreme controller, he's equal to everyone. He does not have the defect of partiality. I explained, I think, several times before how in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's supreme position is explained. And that Krishna's supreme position is that he's pervading everything, controlling everything, without defect. One defect of pervading everything is that one may be impersonal. But Krishna is pervading everything, but at the same time he's aloof. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagata vyaktamurtina. By my energy, I'm pervading everything, yet I remain aloof. I do not have the defect of impersonality. Because if something is everywhere, if something is pervading everywhere, then he may have the defect of not being in one place to relate with you. But Krishna is pervading everything, but remains aloof. He's still a person. Another defect of being all pervasive, which is a qualification of the absolute truth, which is the standard of the absolute truth, is that you're everywhere, but you're burdened by everything. So also, Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita that although I'm everywhere, mamatma bhuta bhavana, everything is happening. What does Prabhupada say? Krishna's will is an absolute fact. So it's not because he's controlling everything, he's burdened by everything. Krishna's will is a fact. In the material world, when you're controlling everything, you have to put so much effort and energy into it to accomplish your goals. But Krishna's will is an absolute fact. And another defect of being everywhere, this is also described in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter. Another defect is if you're everywhere and you control it, then you're responsible for everything that happens. But Krishna's Bhagavad Gita says, Udasinavat. He's neutral, like neutral. Neutral means like a judge. The judge is the controller. He says, you are sentenced to death and you are rewarded. But although the judge is the controller, he's neutral. He's not responsible for that person's death. And he's not responsible for that person being rewarded. It's the person's own activities or actions that are responsible, even though the judge is controlling his destiny in that sense. The person in the court has caused his own destiny. So similarly, that says here also that Krishna does not, Kunti is saying Krishna does not have that defect. He's, even though he's eternal time and by time everyone becomes happy or distressed. No. And Prabhupada said, everyone is suffering and enjoying the result of his own destiny. This destiny is made by the living beings in course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over the material nature, and thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. So by our own dealings and interactions in the world, we cause our destiny. And therefore, when one suffers, he should not complain because he himself is the cause of what is coming to him. We create our own environment. It's a very nice description by Kunti about how Krishna is not just the son of Devaki, but he's the supreme personality of God. And not just the son. Remember in the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, we discussed the term Krishna being called Vasudev. And Prabhupada said he's the all-pervading personality, Vasudev. But at the same time, he's the son of Vasudev. In other words, he's all-pervading, but has not lost his personality. So she's explaining that although he's the son of Vasudev, the son of Devaki, Krishna is also God. 29. Nivedakaschit bhagavanschakirshitam tave hamanasya nirnam vidambanam nayasya kaschit dayatosti karhachit dveshyas chatyasmin vishamamatirninam. O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. So here, Kunti is just, in one sense, repeating the same point in another way, that no one can really understand your transcendental pastimes because you appear to be human. You are the son of your mother and father. You are my nephew. So it appears to be misleading. Why? It's misleading because he's God, but also it's misleading is because he appears to have relationships and not be impartial. In other, he has relationships and therefore is partial. It's very difficult to understand how Krishna's, in the last verse it says he's equal to everyone, but he's killing demons and he's protecting the devotees. He seems to be relating with everyone just like a human being does. In Bhagavad Gita it says, samaham sarvabhuteshu, name bhakta priya. Krishna says, I am equal to everyone. Name dveshastinapriya. And therefore I don't hate anyone or don't like anyone. That's the God, that I don't hate people or I don't favor people. That's the position of the Absolute. He's not under the law of karma. He's not deal with people like a human being. Prabhupada said, let me read it. It's clearer when Prabhupada says it. The Lord's mercy upon the fallen souls is equally distributed. He has no one as the specific object of hostility. The very conception of the personality of Godhead as a human being is misleading. His pastimes appear to be exactly like a human being's. He loves his parents. He fights with his enemies. But actually, they are transcendental. Without any tinge of material contamination, he is undoubtedly known as partial to his pure devotees. But in fact, he is never partial, as much as the sun is never partial to anyone. So this same point is going to be explained again, so that people will not misunderstand Krishna's position as a human being, hating and liking in this world. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you're partial. They only imagine that this is a human tendency, but you're not actually partial. And Prabhupada gives the example, by utilizing the sun rays, sometimes even the stones become valuable. Whereas a blind man cannot see the sun, although there are enough sun rays before him. The sun rays are open to everyone, but the capacity of the receptacles differ. So Krishna is equal to everyone, but in distributing his mercy. But some are better receptacles of that mercy, just like the jewel can utilize the rays of the sun rays, the rock. What does it say? Was it a stone can become a jewel by utilizing the rays of the sun, but a blind man gets no benefit. Both are getting the rays of the sun. One is a better receptacle. So, therefore, Krishna is equal to everyone. It's just some people are receptacles of that mercy. And later on in the purport, Prabhupada gives another example. His mercy, see in the last paragraph, when the Lord descends on this material world by his all-merciful energy, he plays like a human being, and therefore it appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees only. But that is not a fact. Despite such apparent manifestation of partiality, his mercy is equally distributed. In the battle of Kurukshetra, all persons who died in the fight before the presence of the Lord got salvation without the necessary qualifications. And because death before the presence of the Lord purifies the passing souls and the effects of all sins. So the Lord is not partial. And then Prabhupada even says it is wrong for people to think of him as partial. But the devotees do receive more of his mercy. And the Lord does give them more attention and care. But that's not a contradiction to his impartiality, because they make themselves receptacle. They make themselves a receptacle to his mercy by their pure love for him. In other words, what opens one's heart to the mercy of God is one's pure love of him. That's the receptacle. And therefore, Prabhupada in the purport explains, those who are completely against the service of the Lord are considered to be in abject darkness. In other words, if you're against the Lord, then his mercy does not come. Those who ask for the Lord's favor only at the time of necessity are partial recipients of the mercy of the Lord. So if you're a mixed devotee, in other words, when you approach the Lord, but you approach him in a selfish way for your own material desires, then because you approach the Lord, he reciprocates. And those who are 100% engaged in the service of the Lord are full recipients of the mercy of the Lord. When you depend on the Lord and you serve the Lord and you love the Supreme Lord, then he, because he's the Supreme Person, and he doesn't have the defect of impersonality, he reciprocates with that. So in one sense, it may seem like he's favoring the devotee, but he's only responding to the devotee's love, service, and affection for him. Such partiality in receiving the Lord's mercy is relative to the recipient. It is not due to the partiality of the all-merciful Lord. In other words, Krishna will bestow his benedictions upon any living entity that renders pure devotional service to him. So that's the conclusion. Next verse. Janma karma shivishvatmam ajasya katur atmana viryan nirshishu yadeshu tarajanta vidambanam. Of course, it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work, though you are inactive, and that you take birth, though you are the vital force and the unborn. You yourself descend among animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. So, Kunti is explaining further about Krishna's, the difficulty of understanding Krishna. And one difficulty of understanding Krishna is that he has inconceivable potency. If you don't accept that Krishna has inconceivable potency, then there's a chance that you will become a Mayavadi. Because if you don't accept that Krishna has inconceivable potency, then the fact that he's a person and at the same time pervading everything at the same time, you'll see as a contradiction, and therefore you'll think it is an illusion. Or you'll think that because God is absolute, that if he is, that the manifestation of differentiated parts and parcels coming from him must be an illusion because it relativizes the absolute truth. We discussed that before in the very first verse, Jadmad Yasya Yataha, that God is him from everything else is coming. So generally, if you have a source of something, and then there are emanations from that source, then the source becomes less. So Mayavadi conception of the absolute truth is that God must be absolute. He must be untransformed, and therefore the emanations from him must be illusion. But if you understand that God has inconceivable potency, then you can understand that he can be all-pervading and localized at the same time. That so many things can emanate from him without him changing. He has inconceivable potency. So Kunti is explaining, this is a very important point, because the focus of our prayers now is Krishna is not just the son of but my brother. I'm paying obeisance to him because he's actually God. And therefore she's explaining his inconceivable potency. The transcendental pastimes of the Lord Prabhupada says here are not only bewildering but apparently contradictory. In other words, they are inconceivable to the limited thinking power of the human being. So here, this is it. That you work though you're inactive. This is a contradiction. God is inactive in the sense that God must be self-satisfied. You do things or work to attain something that you don't have. That's the impetus for activity. The emphasis of activity is to acquire something for your need. So what is the need of God to do activity and work if everything is within him already? So this appears to be a contradiction. And you take birth though you are the vital force and you're unborn. And you yourself descend amongst animals, men, sages, and this is bewildering. That he appears amongst the animals, although he's not an animal, nor a man, nor a rishi, nor a fish, Prabhupada said. He's the Supreme Lord. All these statements prove without question that the Lord's activities, forms, and deeds are all inconceivable to our limited thinking power. So therefore, the Lord cannot be understood simply by our thinking power and simply by our logic. Our logic and understanding is that God has inconceivable potency. And therefore, he's not subject to the laws of material nature. He is the creator of the material nature. And therefore, he can do whatever he wants. So however the Lord manifests, or tadejati, tadnaijati, tadure, tadvantike, tarantarasya sarvasya, taru sarvasya bayati. He's near, he's far. He's inside, he's out. So, therefore he can be understood only by his mercy. And there Prabhupada quotes from the Brahma Samhita, he cannot be understood by Vedic knowledge, but understood by the pure devotees, because they are intimately related to him. Vedeshu Dulabham Adulabham Atma Bhakto. Vedeshu Dulabham. By the Vedas, it's very difficult. Vedeshu Dulabham Adulabham Atma Bhakto. But by devotion, it's easy because he reveals himself. So this is the way to understand. Only by the mercy of the internal potency which comes in the form of the Guru, the Sadhu, and the Shastra can he be understood. Only by samvit potency, his own cognitive potency, which is an aspect of his knowledge, can he be understood. Gopyadade tvaya kritagasi dhammatavad yate dashasru kalilanjana sambramaksham Vakram naniya paya bhavan Vaktam naniya paya bhavanaya stithasya Samam vamohayati bir api yadvibhati. My dear Krishna, Yasoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes, and you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. So, Jiva Goswami said, this is the most sublime truth, that all this, though this Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he is conquered by the devotees. This is more bewildering than the previous verse, where the Lord takes birth as an aquatic. Prabhupada said in the purport, here is a specific example of the Lord being the Supreme and at the same time a plaything in the presence of his pure devotee. Here you are afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. One's only fearful if things are beyond his control. If one can control everything, then what is the necessity for fear? So God is controlling everything. So why at the same time should he be fearful? And the reason is because he forgets that he's God. To enjoy the love of his mother. When you want to enjoy the love of your mother, then that love that you enjoy is that my mother is maintaining me, and my mother is protecting me. If we have fond memories of our mother, it's only because she had so much love for us that she protected us and maintained us. She protected and maintained us because she felt we were dependent on her. And we responded because we felt that she was actually protecting and maintaining us. So for Krishna to enjoy the love of his mother, he has to forget that he's God. He has to think, I need my mother. And for the mother to love the child, the mother Yasoda loved Krishna, she has to forget that he's God. And she has to think that he needs me. The Supreme Lord accepts the loving, spontaneous service of his devotees more relishably when the service is rendered spontaneously out of pure affection without any reverential admiration. So,
This is the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. Their love is the purest because there's nothing in their activities for the service of Krishna other than love. When you understand that Krishna is God, there's a sense of duty of obligation in your relationship to him. It's like you may love your father, you may love your mother, but there's also some sense of duty. There's an etiquette. Because they're my superiors, there's a certain behavior I must do. There's a certain way I must act. So that obligation or duty is something external to love. So unless in Vrindavan, unless Krishna manifests to his devotee in a way in which they don't understand he's supreme, then they cannot love him purely without anything external to that love. So that's spontaneous love of Godhead. It's more powerful than love mixed with the conception of Krishna's divinity, which puts some obligation or duty in the relationship. So therefore, there's no conception by Mother Yasoda that Krishna is God. And when Krishna becomes absorbed in his relationship with his mother, there's no conception. He doesn't have a conception of himself as God. He only sees that I'm a child and I'm dependent on my mother. And therefore, when his mother wants to chastise him to improve his behavior, he becomes fearful. Isn't this so bewildering? That he's the supreme Lord, the supreme controller, and that he becomes a plaything in the presence of his pure devotees. So Mother, Queen Kunti is relishing this. And it's so bewildering.
Anyway, we'll finish this verse tomorrow. Any questions? Shilapupad ki this over there.